Hello, this is Bob Krueger from the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and for the next half hour I'll be reading to you from Thought for Food for October 2011. October is National Apple Month. North Carolina is among the 10 top apple-producing states in the country, and 85% of our $24 million a year crop is raised in Henderson County, just south of Asheville. This year's crop was battered by hail, heat, and in some places, moderate drought. Fall to some North Carolinians means a trip to the mountains for leaf watching, cider drinking, and apple picking. If all you crave is North Carolina apples, you only have to travel as close to your local farmer's market. For the next few weeks, you'll see an abundance of early season, fresh-picked North Carolina apples from Gala to Honeycrisp, and you can continue to get your fill well into January because of many homegrown varieties from Arkansas Black to Stamen Winesaps store well and will still be available at the markets. The apples that you'll be seeing at the market are therefore smaller and have a higher sugar content, says Jack Ruff, the industry's marketing specialist with the North Carolina Department of Agriculture. The apples will taste better this year, he said. This is good news for we apple lovers. To possibly help us make choices, here's a list of varieties we'll be likely to see on the market throughout the rest of this year. They include Arkansas Black, which is good for eating and baking with a natural waxy finish. The flavor improves with storage. The Black Twig is tart and similar to the Arkansas Black. Cameo is half sweet and half tart, good for both cooking and eating. The Fuji, very sweet, good for eating and cooking. Golden Delicious, a rich, mellow flavor, retains its shape after cooking. A good choice for salads because it doesn't turn brown easily. Gold Rush, which is tart, good for eating. Johnnigold, a tangy, sweet, and good for eating. Limber Twig, sweet and acidic, excellent for eating. Pink Lady, crisp, tart, and good for eating and making cider. It becomes sweeter as it matures in storage. Granny Smith, a tart, green-skinned apple that's good for cooking and makes great pies. Red Delicious, the world's most widely planted variety. Sweet and mild-flavored, good for eating. The Rome, crispy, juicy, excellent for cooking and baking. The Stamen Winesap, tart, good for eating, cooking, and making cider. It makes excellent applesauce and pies. I find that you can cook any variety of apple that might be available, although some have more flavor after being cooked. We often put a couple of Granny Smith apples, which are a good cooking apple, sliced thin into a microwave dish with a bit of sweetener, some cinnamon, and serve as a side dish for a meal, especially when we have pork as an entree. A new study suggests that caffeine in coffee might help chase the blues away for women. Compared with uncaffeinated women, those who drink the equivalent of four or more cups of coffee a day are more likely to drink alcohol and smoke cigarettes, less likely to volunteer their time in church or community groups. But a new study finds that the well-caffeinated women have a key health advantage over their sisters who don't drink coffee or drink decaffeinated coffee. In the back-and-forth world of research on caffeine's effects, the latest study suggests women who get several jolts of Java a day may do more than get a quick boost. Their mental health may seem sustained improvement even as the physical stresses of aging accumulate. Among a population of women tracked for as long as 18 years each, the women who routinely consumed the highest levels of caffeine were 20% less likely than those who drank little to none to become depressed when they're nearing or in their 60s. Coffee, which ounce for ounce delivers the strongest dose of caffeine, was most women's pick-me-up of choice. And generally, the more caffeine a woman drank, the less likely she was to be in good mental health. This study was published in a recent issue of the Archives of Internal Medicine. A small amount of coffee may keep you more active and more happy, and that may result in the long run in better brain health, says Dr. Alberto Asherio of Harvard University, the senior author of the study. Cautioning that his group's findings are preliminary, he added they should ease concerns about female addicts as they enter midlife. The average age of the participants was 63 years in 1996 when researchers began tracking the incidence of depression among the women. To gauge the link between caffeine consumption and depression, the authors drew upon the long-running Nurses' Health Study. The 53,730 women who participated in the larger study completed periodic surveys of eating habits for 14 years. When Keith Werney goes grocery shopping, checking out with the cashier is worth a few extra moments rather than risk that a self-service machine might go awry and delay him even more. Most shoppers side with him, studies show. And with that in mind, some grocery chains nationwide are begging the do-it-yourself option, once considered the wave of the future in the name of customer service. Big Y Foods recently became one of the latest to announce it was phasing out self-service lanes. Some other regional chains and major players, including some Albertson locations, have reduced their unstaffed lanes and adding more clerks to traditional lanes. Market studies cited by the Arlington, Virginia-based Food Marketing Institute found that only 16% of supermarket transactions in 2010 were done at self-checkout lanes in stores that provided that option, and that's down from a high of 22% 3 years ago. Overall, people reported being much more satisfied with their supermarket experience when they used the traditional cashier-staffed lanes. Supermarket chains started introducing self-service lanes about 10 years ago, touting them as an easy way for shoppers to scan their items' barcodes, pay, and head out on their way. Retailers also anticipated a labor saving, potentially reducing the number of cashiers. The reality, though, was mixed. Some shoppers loved them, while others' reactions ranged from disinterest to outright hatred, much of it shared on blogs or in Facebook groups. An internal study by Big Y found delays in the self-service lines caused by customer confusion over coupons, payments, and other problems, intentional or accidental theft, including misidentifying the produce and baked goods as less expensive varieties, and other problems that helped guide its decision to bag the self-service lanes. While some chains are reducing their self-service options, others say they're keeping it in place along with the traditional lanes because they think giving shoppers that choice is an important part of customer service. Our philosophy is giving customers options. People shop in different ways. We want to accommodate those preferences, said Susie Robinson, a spokeswoman for Stop and Shop supermarket company who operates in the New England area. They have self-service lanes in about 85% of their 400 stores. Kroger says it's keeping the self-service option because customers like it, although one remodeled store replaced it with another quick checkout method that uses a cashier. Phil Lempert, a food industry analyst, says supermarkets have other motivations to get rid of self-service lanes beyond customer service. They will eventually need to replace the checkout computers to read newly emerging types of barcodes, so there's little business sense in keeping and replacing those self-service machines if they're not well used anyway, he said. Perhaps more important, he said, the growing trend toward using barcode reading programs on smartphones is likely to change supermarket shopping. Some scholars who follow the retail food industry say decisions to do away with self-service lanes aren't necessarily the death knell of the trend. Home Depot and some other businesses which cater to customers with a do-it-yourself mentality report success with their self-service lanes. But not all supermarket shoppers share that mentality, and whether they embrace or reject the self-serve option may come down to demographics, such as whether they're in a tech-savvy region like the Triangle and other factors that supermarkets cannot control. It would seem that every publication has an article that relates to our family. Late issue of Time magazine on what we spend. In a part of this story is a list of five items we should stop spending our money for, and I'll share them with you. And here they are. Alternative flu remedies. We're told to fight back against aches and chills and other misery-inducing symptoms with herbs or vitamin supplements. The Center for Disease Control says there's no scientific evidence that any herbal, homeopathic, or other folk remedies have any benefit against influenza. Unlimited cell phone minutes. We're told to sign up for an all-you-can-yak plan and never pay over limit charges. The truth is that the average family uses only 735 minutes of talk time a month, which is close to a typical family plan threshold of 700 minutes. bottled water. Quench your thirst with water from a place that looks nice on a label. If you do, you're probably paying more than a dollar a gallon, and many brands' dirty little secret is that they use tap water and treat it with minerals or chemicals. The exception is if you're vacationing in a country where tap water can't be trusted. Lottery tickets. We're bred to believe that we can strike it rich by buying a chance to win a large amount, and we never have to work again. According to Powerball, a player's odds of winning are 1 in nearly 196 million. The odds of dying from a meteorite striking the Earth is 1 in 700,000. Credit card payment insurance. This pitch is for you to pay a monthly fee, and the credit card company will make payments for you if you lose your job or become sick or disabled. The truth is that this, quote, protection, unquote, can cost several hundred dollars a year, and there are often so many restrictions that you won't see a dime. Hopefully a word to the wise is sufficient. A new grocery store opened in Roxborough recently in a location that was a Lowe's food store just a week before. It's called Just Save, and the S in Save is a dollar sign, which is owned and operated by the same Winston-Salem company that owns Lowe's Foods. It is aimed at price-conscious customers in areas of the state that have been hard hit by the economy. We're actually referring to Just Save as Lowe's Foods' frugal cousin, says Lisa Seelup, a spokeswoman for Lowe's Foods. The Roxborough store is the first Just Save store to open in the Triangle. Other Just Save stores are in Pilot Mountain, Wilkesboro, and Graham. A fifth Just Save store has opened in Thomasville, with a sixth scheduled to open in Asheboro. Plans for future stores beyond the first six remain tentative, Seelup says. We're really in the early stages of this, and we'll evaluate the viability of expanding it into other areas, she said. Customers who were in the Lowe's food store in Roxborough a week before the change will definitely notice changes in the newly converted Just Save store, Seelup said. One big difference is a huge dollar section called the Dollar Spot, which fills an entire aisle containing a variety of products from health and beauty items and food to toys and cleaning products, she said. Other changes include different uniforms for employees and a different decor. Stores have a hometown feel to them, including a bell at the door that customers are encouraged to ring as they leave if they feel they receive good service. We've cut some corners to save money on service and aesthetics, Seelup said, to serve the price-conscious consumer. Just Save stores will accept coupons, and the number of coupons will not be limited. However, unlike Lowe's Foods, Just Save will not double the value of coupons. Among the other bargains planned for Just Save shoppers, five packages of meat for $19.99, and locally grown produce and other products made in North Carolina. I'd like to visit one of these stores. It's gazing at you from the billboards, leering at you in deli cases, and peeking at you out of your drive-through biscuit. Is there a better gauge of America's mood right now than the surge in bologna consumption? At North Carolina-based chain Biscuitville, bologna biscuits are so popular that they moved from a seasonal offering to a permanent spot on the menu. Hardee's and Bojangles went head-to-head with bologna biscuit specials this summer. The biscuits did so well that Bojangles stretched the special out a week longer than planned, and Hardee's may keep them on the menu well into the winter. Fried bologna sandwiches are on the menus of the Market Grill and Community Deli in Raleigh. As menu specials go, bologna was a no-brainer, says Mike Beerus, the Senior Vice President of Research and Development for Charlotte-based Bojangles. I don't think there's a kid in the South that didn't have a bologna sandwich in the summertime. Bologna is an all-American sausage. It's not a fried rutabaga that nobody understands. We should have expected it, of course. Bologna sales went up 125% in June of 2009, the year following the start of the tough economic times. At that time, it gave rise to reports of a bologna index that tied sales to the state of the economy. Nancy Cruz certainly saw the bologna bubble coming. An Atlanta-based menu analyst who advises Fortune 500 companies, she gives a yearly State of the Plate talk at Menu Trends conferences. In 2009, Cruz certainly saw that bologna biscuits would be big, part of a phenomenon she calls, when the going gets tough, the tough turn to meatballs. In 2011, she hasn't seen any reason to expect a change. really basic, almost heirloom types of food continue to get a lot of play, she said. The economy forces us into this culinary hunker down, and part of that is to re-embrace those very basic, comforting foods. Dr. Marianne Bickle, the director of the Center for Retailing and the University of South Carolina, sees two issues behind bologna. Yes, nostalgia is a part of it, but it's also just plain economics. Food prices have gone up 14%, she said, so people are looking for bargains, and restaurants need something they can offer at a lower price to increase traffic. Marketing bologna as special is truly being creative, she said. Bologna fans can say their day is coming. That'll be October the 24th, National Bologna Day. And how will you celebrate this special day? Maybe it's about time. In America, bologna don't get much respect. Even its name has become slang for something that isn't real. And that's a shame. Really, bologna is an Americanized version of the Italian mortadella, a specialty of the city of Bologna in Italy. Real mortadella dates back to the ancient Romans. The name comes from the mortar and pestle used to grind the meat into a paste and the myrtle that originally seasoned it. In America, we slice bologna thick and fry it or stick it in a sandwich. In Italy, you slice mortadella ultra thin so it practically melts in your mouth. But bologna is a lot like hot dogs. They're good hot dogs and they're crummy hot dogs. There are also other places in the world that appreciate bologna. They're all beef kosher bolognas, German bolognas, and the more seasoned Dutch version called Lebanon bologna. Finding good quality bologna can take a little looking. In a supermarket, try the deli case instead of the lunch meat case. Expect the higher quality bologna to have a higher price. When you do find good bologna, though, you can do more than put it into a sandwich. A thick slab of bologna, smoked on a grill, diced and seasoned and passed around with toothpicks, is popular at tailgate parties. In the meantime, don't expect the bologna biscuit to disappear anytime soon. We don't make a habit of considering doing something if it doesn't hit, says Mr. Barras of Bojangles. So you'll see it again. Would you believe it? There's a package of bologna in my refrigerator. If October 24th is National Bologna Day, would it surprise you that it's also National Food Day? If Earth Day looked at the environment, what should Food Day involve? Well, of course, food in all its breadth and depth. And that's the hope of the Center for Science and the Public Interest, which has spearheaded an effort to designate October 24th as National Day to consider not only what we eat, but also the policies behind those decisions and the people who grow and harvest. Modeled after Earth Day, the idea is for this to be an annual event across the country that gets us to change the way we eat and think about food. The key message, eat real and support healthful, affordable food grown in a sustainable way. We try to create a national event that local groups can take advantage of, says Director Michael Jacobson. You can find out what is planned around the nation on the interactive map on Food Day website, foodday.org. Around the country, schools are offering special menus, governors in several states are issuing proclamations, and a regional festival in Savannah, Georgia expects 15,000 people to attend. On board is a wide-ranging group of organizations that have supported the concept, from the American Culinary Federation and the American Dietetic Association to the Jewish Community Centers Association of North America to the Vegetarian Resource Group. Food Day originated 36 years ago when college campuses and churches were focusing on hunger issues, but food as a subject didn't attract a substantive following in the mid-1970s. Back then, yogurt couldn't be found in a grocery store. Organic foods were the butt of jokes, Jacobson said. Even the U.S. dietary guidelines didn't come out until 1980. Now seems like a good time to bring it back because there's more interest in nutrition, farmers market, food deserts, agriculture subsidies, he said. Things have changed tremendously as reflected by the fact that many health departments across the country are taking advantage of Food Day. Food Day will be observed from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Legislative Building in downtown Raleigh. It's a good time to reflect from time to time on the progress we've made in the matter of diet and health. The big world of food and nutrition is a challenging mix of pleasure and puzzle. like most of us, we probably love to eat, but have to work on understanding how our choices affect our health as well as the environment and animal welfare. Hopefully, Food Day may give us some suggestions and ideas of how to make these decisions easier. Fred Thompson, who writes the column Weekend Gourmet, tells it's time to begin using your slow cooker to prepare meals that fit into the fall season. He writes, "Come on, haven't you been thinking about a pot roast lately? Maybe a rich lamb stew might fill your mouth as the tree leaves put on their show. A roast chicken with pan gravy enhanced with roasted giblets returns as the weather cools and the changing of the guard for seasonal food begins." This is just something different about fall foods that seems to seek soul and make us think of holidays in the not-so-distant future. He continues, "My summer to fall excursions start with a slow cooker, for which most of us is the perfect vessel for creating a great braise. Liquid, protein, season, and vegetables form the basic of recipes. Think short ribs of beef braised in red wine and beef stock, then served with mashed potatoes or grits. A beef brisket in chili sauce and wine brings me memories of my childhood Jewish friend's mom's cooking. Using a slow cooker, some of us call it a crock pot, and basic braise techniques can cut your food bill by letting you use less expensive cuts of meat and cook them till all their tenderness has arrived, and the flavor of the liquids hugs the meat and engulfs you in its deliciousness. And it is simple. The weather is cool enough now, so dust off the slow cooker. It can really be your friend and give you great meals. Thanks, Fred, for this reminder." The North Carolina State Fair takes place during the month of October, and many folks enter various contests. One such person is Todd Dawson of Garner, who has raised a 282-pound watermelon. The story of his raising of this melon is truly a labor of love. All summer long, he pampered his baby, building it a bed of sand, crafting a shade tent made from foam insulation, placing rat traps around it to ward off rodent invaders. But his work bore spectacular fruit in the form of a hog-sized melon, 282 pounds, a new state record. Just lifting this piece of fruit requires four men, but Dawson hopes his masterpiece will stay fresh enough, long enough to tote to the state fair and get ogled alongside other giants. "Pumpkins may get all the glory," says Dawson, who is 39. "I've only got two hobbies. I grow watermelons and I hunt deer." An ice sculptor by trade, Dawson drew his watermelon in his Garner garden, tending a vine that covered 420 square feet, snipping off every competing piece of fruit. He credits the exceptional weather, but also the fortune of just dodging both a hurricane and a tropical storm. Hailstorms pounded his neighbors just down the road, but spared his precious melon. Mr. Dawson has this message for any budding giant growers. It's work. He planted the 282-pounder in May and spent probably 2 hours a day keeping it healthy. It started life in an egg incubator, moved upstairs under a growing light, and then to a greenhouse before first touching soil. Todd's record breaker is about 90% organic, but it took some chemical help to ward off pests. "Squash bugs are terrible," he said, adding they even eat the bug killer. "Seven dust, they eat that stuff. It doesn't bother them. My chicken won't eat squash bugs. That'll tell you something." North Carolina is prime territory for monster melons, said Sam Lovelace, the president of the North Carolina Giant Vegetable Growers, who has seen numerous state and world record holders pass through the Yadkin Valley Pumpkin Festival in Elkin, including Dawson's. "It's pretty awesome," Lovelace said. "He only missed the world record by 9 pounds. Expect some recognition at the fair for Dawson's melon," said Andrea Ashby, the spokeswoman for the State Department of Agriculture. "Only giant pumpkins and decorative cakes can claim to be rivals. People get their picture taken with them," she said. "But don't plan on getting a slice. A melon this size is too mealy to be good eating, and cutting one would require a chainsaw. If I want to eat a melon," he said, "I'll go to the grocery store and get one." Americans talk skinny but eat fat. No matter that First Lady Michelle Obama has been on a crusade for a year and a half to slim down the country, never mind that some restaurants have started listing calories on their menus. When Americans eat out, we order burgers and fries anyway. In a country where more than two-thirds of the population is overweight, food choices are often made on impulse. I lost my place, excuse me. So while 47% of Americans say they'd like restaurants to offer healthier items like salads and baked potatoes, only 23% tend to order the food, according to a survey last year by food research firm Technomic. The mixed message hasn't got many restaurants from offering healthier fare. After all, the government has stepped up its oversight and influence over the industry that it blames for America's expanding waistline. National rules about putting calorie information on menus are expected to take effect next year, and Mrs. Obama touts restaurants and companies that slash calories and foods. But revamping a menu can be difficult and expensive. For example, it took Dunkin' Donuts 4 years to figure out how to make its donuts without trans fat, without altering the taste. Many chains have scaled back their efforts to roll out healthy foods. The number of health-related claims made on menus like reduced fat or reduced carbs fell 5% from 2008 to 2010, according to Technomic's study. So do you order by impulse or intellect? Last month was National Honey Month. What do you know about one of nature's sweeteners? Would you think that honey, white sugar, or brown sugar has the most calories per tablespoon? Honey has 64, brown sugar 51, and white sugar 48, but honey tastes so much better. Americans consume almost 410 million pounds of honey every year. 39% of this honey is imported. Which state of the United States produces the most honey? I was surprised to learn that it's North Dakota, and I would have thought either California or Florida. A recent picture in the News Observer shows a beehive under the deck of a Wake Forest home. It would appear that this was one of those hives in which the queen bee went wandering, and this is where the swarm landed. I only hope that the property owner sought the help of a beekeeper to remove the bees so he might enjoy some of the honey. A quirky Wisconsin law intended to protect the dairy state's industry by making it illegal to serve margarine as a replacement for butter is being targeted for a repeal. The 44-year-old law that's little known to most diners is celebrated as being part of the colorful part of the state's dairy past. State representative said he Googled stupid laws, and this one came up. But in 1895, Wisconsin passed its ban on the sale or use of margarine colored to imitate butter. And do any of you listeners remember ever seeing margarine colored white that reminded you of lard that came with a small bubble of color substance that one had to work into the margarine with a butter paddle? This might not have occurred here in the South. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Thought for Food. Be sure to listen next time, and we hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Bob Kruger, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and the content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until next time.